Hey, everybody. Welcome to V Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. I'm your host, Lisa Burwell, and I'm having so much fun in season four. This is day two, and I have Jay Lyles in the studio, who is many things, and I will just tell you a few of them before we introduce him on camera. An attorney, a writer, a songbird, a surfer, musician, youth pastor, soccer coach, web designer, and world traveler. Are you intrigued? I am. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
I'm so excited about this.
I am very excited too. So we had a lively, long chat last Thursday.
We did.
In preparation for this, and I'm excited. I was excited to have you on as a guest for a couple months. I knew I wanted to reach out to you. I've known you for a while through other people, mm-hmm. my family, my brother, my nephews.
Your brother's an amazing soccer player.
He is, isn't
and
he?
And your nephew, who is his son. They're both amazing soccer players.
Yeah. They are. But you don't play with them anymore, right?
Not as much as I used to. Okay. We played on the Red Bar soccer team together, and that's how we all kind of got brought together. Patrick was still growing up, but Patrick can whip all of us now.
Oh, can he?
But we all want to be Jim Rohn, your brother.
I know. Why is that? Everybody wants to. I want to be Jim.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's a really good guy. And his whole family, too. So, obviously know you, but I hadn't really reconnected with you or connected with you until I attended the Emerald Coast Storytellers event at Chiringo several months ago, and you were one of the
storytellers.
And I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit here and watch Jay and see what he has to say and get to know him a little bit better. And then you tell really interesting stories, of which I want you to touch on on this podcast as well. And then you went into song, a cappella. Weirdly, let's just start there because that's like how we reconnected at the beginning. Yeah. And then we'll go back and we'll go forward. But I was so impressed that with everything that you were saying, how comfortable you were there on stage, and how happy you seemed to be about being there and telling your stories.
Yeah.
And then you closed it out with a song. What was the song again?
I have a song called Dare You on Spotify that I released. It was one of my last songs I released probably in 2012, somewhere around in there. But I've sung some other a cappella songs there at Emerald Coast Storytellers. It's a really great place to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about Emerald Coast Storytellers because I love listening to stories. So when I'm there, I'm already excited because there are already so many great storytellers there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
So, and you go often, right?
Yes. And I go often. I guess it was one of the things there telling stories is that they kind of started out of the Distillery 98. And I knew Harrison Holditch that started Distillery 98. Mm-hmm. And then his wife, Christy, and Allie were riding up there, decided to invite people up. Mm-hmm. Mike Ragsdale was their featured storyteller at Holier Than Thou. And so I figured it's like, well, I know these people. And Mike's going to be there talking about his graphic novel. They're going to be drinking vodka. This is going to be the best place for my story called Jay's Shitty Car.
Right. Right.
So they let me tell my stories that involve some expletives, and but you just got to know your audience.
But the genesis of that is being optimistic in all situations, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, you can recite that if you want to, or sing it. I don't know if you're up for it in this podcast. And, you know, you seem like a free spirit. And I didn't know you very well, but when we talked last Thursday, I was really impressed. I knew you were an attorney, and you're licensed in Florida and Mississippi.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're a surfer, you're a soccer, you're singing, and I'm like, wow, like, he has, like, the coolest life and seems to be doing it his way. And when I said that to you, like the Frank Sinatra song, you know, sometimes that can be said complimentary or it can be said disparagingly, right? And of course I mean it complimentary. But then somehow I think you answered one of my questions that I had about how do you do this and do things your way.
Yeah.
And I think, and I wrote it down here, that people are trying to worry you with their worry about you and your life.
Yes.
Now expound upon that, which I thought was quite profound.
Well, you know, coming across it from different sections, I never want to worry anybody, but when they're worried, it kind of throws off the things that I need to do. Especially, it's like you learned it in sports. If you can't keep your composure while you're doing something unique, then you're not going to be able to get enough speed to get it done. You're not going to be able to keep your mind focused on it. And there was part of a song that I had written called Who Needs Cars When You're Given Stars? And that's part of it that sticks out was, as I step out on the water, I can hear them say, Jay, you're acting crazy. Have to save you one day. Get back in the boat. You're seeing things. You worry us to death when you're living by faith and this hope. What are you hoping for? And I was promised treasures that never rot and that moths can never eat. And who needs cars when you're given stars? And the one you work for owns everything. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that I practice. And I guess it was starting when I was like 10 or 11, our soccer coach, that he made us run all the time, not out of punishment, you know, not because like just to be in shape, but he would say, your mind is a liar. Your body can go further than what your mind is telling you. It was like, you will physically pass out when your body's had enough. So don't listen to your mind saying that's like, oh, this is going to hurt us. You know, you can't go any further. And I think something, we were like 127 in wins and 13 losses. And so we trusted him to get those results done.
Wow.
So, but those are the things that I kind of practice, you know, when I get into really tough situations and people's worrying me can kind of like, it's like, hey, you know, just get over it. I got it figured out, you know?
Right. Right.
And, but I don't want them to ever feel like they're going to have to come use their resources or their time to get me out of a situation. Mm-hmm. And I had someone ask me, they're like, so what are you doing these days? A guy that I play music with, he's kind of sent over by another family. Yeah. There's a handful of people that...
He didn't do a very good job.
Yeah. And I said, this is the only thing you got to know. It's like, look, I pay for my own beer and I pay for my own place and I want to hang out with you. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and if you see me about to catch on fire or literally on fire, let me burn. Because like,
well, how did he take that response, by the way? It made him more confused, probably.
No, he's quiet and he understood. He was a musician too. Okay. And he's a creative person, so
he got it.
But like, if it works, wouldn't it be cool if it worked, as opposed to I went skiing with your brother and Patrick. Uh-huh. And I love doing the big jumps in the park, and they're just all about speed.
Yeah. And so mad dogging
mm-hmm. it. So mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to go do the jumps. And there was like these three jumps that were big. They're really big. Mm-hmm. There were two. They had like back to back. And so I did those, hit them. And then I was like, I want to go do those. And there were like these giant jumps. And they were like, Jay, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. And it, like, there's a sign that said like experts only. And I'm like, I want to do those jumps. And they were worrying me. They're like, you're going to get hurt. Because there was a ramp. And then there was a hill that you would have to like get enough speed to hit the ramp and then go over the hill. And I was like, look, I'm not going to get any speed. You know, I'm just going to get enough speed, whatever I get going down the hill. And then I'm not going to push off at the top. So they're like, we're going to film it. I was like, okay, come film it.
They weren't that worried.
Yeah. And so, but what happened was, is that I'm watching the film back and I'm like, is this in slow motion? No way this guy's going to make it. And I hit the ramp and then the hill is this way, you know, it's just out further. Uh-huh. So hit the ramp and then I just nail the top of the hill. Skis come off, roll down the other side of the hill.
That's not how I saw the story going.
I know. Okay. But what happened was they were like, yeah, like, you know, so I was like, look, y'all go do your thing or whatever. You know, I'm going to go do mine. So I didn't tell them I was going back to the big jumps, the three big jumps again. There are these two like high school kids at the top, like talking about like, you know, I could see that they could do it, but they were just debating some things. And I came up and they're like, hey man, you can go ahead. And I was like, man, I just went and I hit the top of the hill. They're like, oh, you knuckled it? And I was like, I'm unfamiliar with the terminology, but that sounds about right. He was like, yeah, knuckled. You know, it's like if there were two knuckles that met. I was like, yeah, I knuckled it. It's like, dude, you got this. You got it. And so I took off with speed, pushed off the ramp, and I hit the jump the way I needed to go. And I was like, I'm going to do the second jump too, because they're back to back. Hit the second jump. And I knew the third one, they get steeper.
Wow.
And the third one, and I'm like, I'm just going to go off the side, you know, side of the hill. I'm not going to hit the ramp. And so, but I have so much speed going that I just go off the edge of the hill, and it's like almost a straight drop off. So I just ragdoll it. I know how to wreck really well, so I don't try to land things. And but then your brother and Patrick came back and filmed it when I got all three of them. And
so you did. So the story then is you went back a third time.
Yeah. So and what happened was is that the first time is that they worried me so much.
Yes, I see that.
That I didn't want to worry them. So I'm like, oh, I'm not going to go fast. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have the speed to be able to hit it the right way. And that happens not to say a lot. There's a handful of times during a day or a handful of people that will worry me. And if I let their worry affect me, then I'm not going to be able to hit the ramps at the speed they need to be hit.
Okay.
You know, figuratively, whether it be kind of like, hey, I'm not going to take this law project. I'm going to take another law project. And like, are you sure? Like, are you going to have enough money until then? I'm like, look, please don't worry me.
Okay. Now, you're a really good storyteller.
Yeah.
And I must know, the third jump, what happened then?
Oh, well, it was funny. I didn't actually, like, I went back and probably took me three other times to get all three jumps. So it was kind of like I was going one, two, missing the third one because it was so steep that I was pretty much on my back by the time I was going towards the hill. So I had to intentionally lean forward. And but when I first hit that big third ramp, and there are people down like where they're getting their, you know, food and drinks at the bottom of the hill, and they just see me just wrecking, and they're just clapping like, way to go. And so even when I fail, there are people that are like cheering for me trying.
Right. But then you did it.
And I did do it. Yeah.
You did finally. And did was it captured on video?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Did Jim and Patrick try it?
No.
No, okay.
Wow. They didn't even touch it.
Ooh, so they're kind of daredevils. So they I have are. A new level of respect for you. I already had a good amount. That's good.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, well, they like to go fast. And I wiped out pretty big trying to follow them going fast. And so learn my lesson there.
Okay. That is pretty funny. Wow. Okay. So there are so many things about you. You know, I mean, one of the things that you said to me, you had listened to some of the podcasts, you know, and getting in preparation to kind of know what this was all about before we sat down and talked. And you said something to the effect of, well, what am I going to say or what do I do? Because these other people are... I do a lot and they're interesting. And I'm like, oh, I would not feel shy about being on this because you do a lot more than most of the other people that I've interviewed.
Well, I appreciate that. I always love people that have their passions and they're going to do it no matter what. And you have so many great people on this podcast that they're you can tell they're so focused and they're going to get their things done.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a thing that they were doing, like a specific thing. Mm-hmm. And I always admire that in people. And so like Kurt Tobias with Chuna, John Welburn with
Very Well Spoken. Mm-hmm.
And you had the VP of St. Joe on here, which is like the largest landowner in the state of Florida. And I'm just like, what do I do?
Everything.
And so, but I was flattered when you came up and asked me to be on the podcast after it was kind of like Emerald Coast Storytellers. And thank you for coming out, listen to me speak at play music at Modica. Charlie Modica up there. It's been really great to hang out with him and his crew. And
when are you doing that again?
I did it for March and April each Thursday, and then took off May, and then, you know, maybe I'll do a couple of Thursdays here in the summer.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of by ear and let my friends know, and we come up there and listen to some music, drink some beer.
Right.
So
it took me 3 weeks. I was going to go the first week, couldn't go. Something came up. Oh, I will be there the second week. Couldn't make it, and I'm like, damn it, I'm going to make it to the third
one. Well, I want everyone, it's like when my mother says, be free, you know, and I'm a person that rarely messages or rarely makes plans, and so I don't want someone to feel like that they have to make it to something that I plan to do unless it works for them with what they want to do for the day. Maybe they need a nap, or maybe they just need to stay home, and so I don't mind if they can't make it to the music.
But I like doing what I say.
Yeah.
So that's then, you know, my thing. Like, I don't like saying I'm going to go somewhere and then not do it. So, yeah. You know, everyone's got their thing that yeah. they live and die by, right? Let's go back to when you first learned to play guitar and piano that your yeah. mom taught you.
My mother taught me, and the first song that she taught me on the guitar was House of the Rising Sun, which it was like later in my life realized it's about a whorehouse. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Like, yeah, she's a cool mom.
And Guns N' Roses, November Rain. I never really had a passion for like reading music. So she would write out the letters and I knew which ones they were on the piano. So that's how I learned how to play November Rain. Mm-hmm. It was like about middle school. Mm. And
you liked it immediately?
It occupied my mind. Mm-hmm. So it was just something that that engaged my mind. Mm-hmm. And so it was just something that I did when I was bored, and I was very often bored. Mm-hmm. But it's like I grew up playing sports year round,
mm-hmm. fishing, soccer, video games. What else? Running, track.
So right? I guess in middle school, it's like there's an eighth grade year that really sticks out to me. I was all in the same season. I was playing soccer, football, two basketball teams, and summer baseball. So okay. Fall baseball. All in the fall.
Wow.
And so, I mean, people were like, who are you playing? Where's your game? And I was like, I don't know. I just get in the car. They take me there.
Really?
So,
yeah. So you were a great athlete.
I had a lot of great coaches uh-huh. and a lot of really cool teammates that were really good. They went on to play professional sports. And so it made it a lot of fun when they could do like really awesome things and we'd win. And to be like, yeah, of course, you know, I do want to show up and play with these guys because right. they're going pro.
Right. Well, weren't you like semi-pro on something?
Well,
right?
So yeah, there was the National Premier Soccer League. There was a team in San Diego that I played for. It's mm-hmm. kind of like their club called San Diego Fusion. And they had like the highest density of semi-professional soccer teams. Were they called semi-professional soccer teams? Mm-hmm. There's another league called PDL, which is mm-hmm. Premier Development League, which is similar to NPSL. And so I tried out for one of the teams, made it. I felt like I was very inconsistent. Like either I could do something amazing, like how'd you do that, or I could just kick it to the other team, and
two ends of
this, and then create more work for me to do. It's a lot easier if you can keep the ball, but I moved to Florida after a season of living in San Diego and playing soccer out there. That's where I worked for the church too. And
were you a youth pastor there?
I was a youth pastor yeah. there. And so that's a whole thing where I called the church I served back in Jackson, Mississippi. And I was like, is there a place for me to serve out here? And there's like, well, there's Saddle Ranch or Saddle Creek. It's like the Purpose Driven Life book guy. Mm-hmm. I think they had something like 10 services going on at once. It was a very impressive setup. Mm-hmm. And I met with a couple of groups and it mm-hmm. was cool. But I like smaller things for me. And there was this other one. Called Northern Hills, and I went up there, and there was an older man in the parking lot, and he's like, hey, what you doing here today at our church? And I was like, whatever y'all need me to do. And you know, they like once I had worked for him a while, and he's like, I couldn't believe this guy. You got to be skeptical at some point. I mean, everyone needs to keep their boundaries, even keep their boundaries with me. And he's like, yeah, what does this guy have up his sleeve? But he really meant it, whatever we wanted him to do. And their youth minister had just gotten married and moved away. And he's like, can you help out with our kids? And, you know, the parents, you know, were helping out too. And then they were like, hey, you know, will you be part-time until we find a full-time youth minister? And saw the parents there. And so, like, yeah, sure. And then they're like, they showed me like the stack of people that had applied for the job. Like, you know, a few months goes by and they're like, we want you to be our youth minister. I was like, okay. And but the guy that was the elder of that church is the guy that created the Total Gym and has like Chuck Norris or whatever, that thing.
Oh, really?
But it was fun showing up places and being useful. And but even though that, like, I work for a church, I don't want anyone to ever, like, contribute goodness to me and try to follow me. It's like everyone needs to have boundaries. Mm-hmm. And but I'd like to show up and be useful where I can. And I had a lot of fun working there getting to play soccer. And then when I moved here to Florida, the owner of the soccer team and another guy on the team, they were like, it's tryouts. Where are you? Like, we're expecting you to play this year. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. Like, thanks for the I'm in Florida now.
Like, oh, and, so you just passed.
Yeah.
Passed
but,
on it.
But it was so nice.
Yes, very nice.
And then the church called up it a year goes by, like, hey, you've been with family in Florida for a year now. Will you consider coming back? And, you know, we'll pay for you to go to seminary school. And, you know, and
you that did,
had,
right?
had all these other incentives. No.
No, you didn't do that. Okay.
No. And okay. So, and then, but I flew back out and I entertained it. And so, and I entertained it. And at the time I was playing music at the Red Bar. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about all the things that I had here in Florida. And the kids really didn't need somebody there. But I was like, there are kids everywhere that need somebody. And I was like, why would I feel like I need to be in Florida more than San Diego? Mm-hmm. And I love playing music at the Red Bar because of my friendship with Ollie Petit mm-hmm. and Philippe. Mm-hmm. And I had some really close friends here. The close friends I had in San Diego had moved away to other places. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the deciding factor to stay in Florida was, you know, not just because of the job I had playing music, which was wonderful, but also because of the friendships that I had through soccer. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. you know, not just your brother, but mm-hmm. Ollie and the rest of the group mm-hmm. that we have. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that was one of the things that I got to do was play for an NPSL team in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Got hired as a youth minister. And then at the church out there, I'm probably there for like a 2 weeks in San Diego for like the first time. And these parents come up to me with like an 8 or 10 year old son. They're like, can you teach our kid how to surf? And I go, I'm so sorry. I'm from Mississippi. We don't have any waves and the water's brown. And it was strange for me to see the reaction on their face because they almost seemed like they were scared of offending me, like they stereotyped me.
They did.
And I was like, but I don't care. And, you know, that they like that's yeah. a cool, that's fine to stereotype. And so I said, you know, I said, I'm fine. She's like, we're so sorry. And I was like, no, it's fine. She's like, our son does need surf lessons, and then he saw you and pointed you out and said, can we ask him? He knows how to surf.
Because he stereotypes yeah, you too.
I know. So it was like, so, but it was fine. And then a couple of weeks goes by and this mother comes up, asks a different form of the question. She didn't ask me if I can teach him how to surf. She goes, hey, will you take my kids surfing? And I tell her the same thing. She goes, oh, well, it's fine. We really just need an adult to be out there with them. They can probably teach you how to surf. We have an extra board. Will you take them surfing? And mm-hmm. I'm like, sure. So take them surfing. And I'm floundering around. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to try to catch one more wave. And I'm walking back out. It's probably like waist high water. And I feel something very slick under the ball of my foot. And then this awful pain in my ankle. And my first thought was, I knew what it was. My second thought was, I can't believe it hurts that bad. So I go up to the lifeguard, get my board. Damn it. So I just go up to the life person in the stand. He's like, can I help you? And I was like, I got stung by a stingray. And he goes, are you sure? People are usually in a lot more pain. I showed him my ankle, and it's like blood's coming out. You can see the hole. My foot's already swollen. He goes, oh, you did? He goes, people usually are in a lot more pain. I go, it hurts really bad. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to cry about it. Mm-hmm. And so he goes, okay, well, I can call EMT, but, the emergency medical, but they're going to do the same thing that we'll do for you here. So you stick your foot in the hottest bucket of water it can stand to cook the poison out. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if that's true. Mm-hmm. Whatever, let's try it. So for like 45 minutes, like mm-hmm. they keep putting hot water. Well, like I got the two middle school kids, you know, it's like we got Wednesday night service we're supposed to go to. And I'm the guy that's supposed to be leading the lesson.
Okay.
Whatever. And so eventually I'm like, we got to go. So, but anyway, my foot's swollen for 2 months. I continue to play soccer. And people were like, did you know do the Stingray Shuffle? I always thought it was the dumbest thing for them to ask me. And I was just like, apparently not. Apparently, like, I was not told that, or I would have done it, and I wouldn't have stepped on a stingray.
Yeah.
So do the Stingray Shuffle. I've never had a problem with needing to shuffle my feet here in the Gulf. Uh-huh. But apparently, if you're going to go out to the Pacific or some other really big open body of water with stingrays, do the stingray shuffle. Shuffle your feet, and it kicks the stingrays up, and they go away. Uh-huh. So
good to know. Okay. Quick segue, because there's many things to talk about. Okay. But seeing as you're talking about this right now, I have to fit it in. What do you think of the shark attacks?
First of all, it's very unfortunate, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it's very scary mm-hmm. for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. In watercolor for a number of years, I helped out a friend named Ryan DeVore with this ocean sports camp called Kids Beach. Mm-hmm. And it was like 9 to noon, like 100 days of summer, really starting in spring and March, spring break. And so we would always have, you know, sometimes we'd have up to 20 kids mm-hmm. out in the water. Sometimes it'd be like 8 kids. And we'd see sharks from time to time. Typically we're on kayaks and paddle boards. And anytime the sharks would see us, they'd go away because our boards are typically bigger than what the sharks are. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the water several times where I've been snorkeling and, you know, I hear someone yelling out my name and I turn, they're like, there's a shark that was coming at you. And I'm like, is it still here? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, I'll look more, but I'm going to go back to snorkeling. And so most of the sharks I've come across and they've even seen is that once I've seen them, they've seen me, that they've gone away. Mm-hmm. I don't think everyone should risk that. Mm-hmm. There are days that we do see sharks in the water with like the kids, and we wouldn't tell them about it. We'd mm-hmm. be like, hey, everyone, back on your board, you mm-hmm. know, kayak, and we're going to take a sand break, maybe play some games up there, and we'd give it a while. Mm-hmm. It's not like we were, mm-hmm. you know, cavalier about it. Mm-hmm. If that's the right word. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we always had daggers on our legs, which I always thought was silly because, like, we never used – I don't think I ever unsheathed it. Mm-hmm. And but also when we were in the water, like the times I was talking about when I was just kind of, like, floating by myself, it was just me and some buddies out there. Mm-hmm. But when we had kids out there, we were always mm-hmm. looking and spinning around and had someone looking out.
Right.
And so – everyone does need to be careful being in open water. Mm-hmm. And there was a shark attack when I was about in middle school. My older sister was in high school. She was probably about 50 yards down. I'm not sure. And that was in Sandestin area, mm-hmm. maybe down in Destin. I can't remember where exactly. And I'm not sure of the outcome of the person either. And mm-hmm. some other people can look it up. Mm-hmm. But I just remember it being like, that doesn't usually happen. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it doesn't happen again for another 10 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. People always ask me, they're like, you know, have you seen any sharks? And I'm like, they're always there. I've been in high rises even decades ago to where it's like, wow, look at all the sharks, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've kept it with videos, not like in a, like, you know, trying to scare myself way, but mm-hmm. just seeing where sharks swim around people and people don't even know they're there.
Right.
So for me, it's that it's an unfortunate thing that I hope doesn't happen again for a long time.
Agreed.
But yeah. it's something that the more we spend time in the water, right, the odds right. are it could happen again.
Yeah. So. Yeah, really, really sad and crazy. it seemed a little bit unusual, like this one seemed different, you know, so you don't know if there's something different.
It did seem
going.
Unusual it because did. The fact that it like happened at two different locations mm-hmm. within a very short period of time. It yeah. was something like straight out of a movie.
Right.
And I think it was, you know, the details that I remember, and people can look up the actual ones, because sometimes my memory fails me, but it was, they were about 4 miles apart. One person involved in one attack and then two mm-hmm. people, I think, involved in mm-hmm. the next one going east mm-hmm. from Watersound to Inlet mm-hmm. Beach. Mm-hmm. And I think they happened within maybe an hour and a half yeah. of each other, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And so, but it was just kind of like, you know, we're starting to see a pattern that happens so closely together.
Yeah.
Like even when I've gone out in the water now, like there's the first sandbar, then there's kind of the channel and the second mm-hmm. sandbar. Mm-hmm. And just for people that they know, like part of another education, not just the sharks, but people are like, yeah. I'm going to swim out and stand on the second sandbar. That joker's like 8 to 12 feet deep. You're not going to stand on it, right. like for the most part. Right. And I mean, there could be some rare days to where it's like you might be able to like put your hand up, you know, above the water line and touch the bottom. Mm-hmm. But people need to be aware that it's deeper than what you think it is, because some people just have enough energy to swim out there.
Mm-hmm, and then they're stand.
Like, I can't mm-hmm. stand. Right. I'm not going to get back. So, you know, please be careful. Yes. Bring a flotation device with you if you want to swim to the second yes. sandbar before you just assume that it's shallow enough to stand. Mm-hmm. But even with the shark attacks now, for me, is that I'm staying pretty much on that first sandbar, maybe slightly on the back half of it, but mm-hmm. not as it goes down into the trough. Mm-hmm. And just because I don't know why it happened, mm-hmm. but I want to be preventative even with me. I got in the water the next day and the next day after that. I was in the water probably 10 minutes before coming into here. Mm-hmm. And so I have to get in the water.
Right.
And but I'm not going to go swim out between the two sandbars mm-hmm. right now. I mean, I can.
Right.
But it's like, if I just want to go get in the water for a little bit, mm-hmm. I'm going to do some things for me to make myself feel safe.
Right. Good.
Yeah.
Good advice. Good PSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Talk about how you got into law school and the judge that was an encourager to you that you clerked for.
Yeah, so I clerked for Judge Kenny Griffiths. He's now on the Mississippi Supreme Court. At the time that I clerked for him, it was the Mississippi Court of Appeals. And I pretty much got the job through coaching soccer at Jackson Prep. Mm-hmm. And I coached three of his sons, and I did well in law school too.
Mm-hmm. Of course you
so,
did.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of like, it was so funny because the secretary, who I am very good friends with now, that she was skeptical on how much was, you know, did you produce a writing sample? Did he look at your resume? And but I got the job because, you know, he knew me as a person, and I did have the credentials that allowed me to get the job. But what happened too was I was coaching soccer at Jackson Prep with my great friend John Marcus Duncan. And I graduated law school. That summer I took the Florida bar, fortunately passed it, came back, continued to coach soccer. Mm-hmm. And my soccer, or all the coach friends, football, baseball, they're like, you know, you didn't have to go to law school to coach with us, right? And I was like, I love this. And then we're at this Meet the Patriots thing mm-hmm. where it's like all the athletes walk out, they get introduced by name, and then Judge Kenny Griffiths is there, and he's like, I thought that you're in Florida now. Like, pass the bar, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, yeah. He's like, you want a job? And I was like, sure. And so when I was there, he recommended a book to me, How to Build and Start Your Own Law Practice. And the encouraging thing that he did for me and talking with him, he goes, you can do whatever you want to do, and it doesn't have to be practicing law. Mm-hmm. He goes, if you make more money doing music or you enjoy it more, do music. He's like, if you wanted to make websites, make websites. If you want to coach, coach. And maybe there are some law projects you want to do, and then but you don't want to be fully involved. We'll bring in the people that specialize in it mm-hmm. and just, you know, co-counsel with them. And so he made me see that. Like, it was really cool to be around him because it wasn't just like, okay, now that you're a clerk, now you need to, you know, like work your way into being a judge or work for a big firm. And I interviewed at a firm in Jackson, Mississippi, another one of my soccer players' parents, and had a couple of lunches with them. And it's like, how are you able to work for the judge and coach soccer? And I was like, well, I'm able to do, you know, my 8 hours of work and 4 hours, and I can go coach. Mm-hmm. And then on the second kind of lunch interview thing, they're like, well, you know, so we're talking about, it's like, well, after the soccer season's over, then we need you here full time. And like, you can go visit them, but like, no more coaching soccer. I was like, well, and I was like, I thought about it. And I told them, I said, yeah, I said, I know that how I do work doesn't really work for the typical law firm billing. I was like, y'all, I know y'all need to do me to do 8 hours of work in 8 hours and then do another 4 hours in 4 hours if I can. They're like, exactly. And I was just like, yeah, that's it's not gonna work. And it's like, but I appreciate it. And I love them to death. That parent had bought me a really nice crystal decanter. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to be with the soccer program when they had won 8 straight championships in a row. And wow. So that was my last season to coach there, the 7 seasons that I mm-hmm. coached. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really nice gift that he gave me and the head coach. And they went on to win number 9 and 10.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
Impressive record.
Yeah. Well, it was just, there were a lot of exciting. People. There were a lot of people. There were a lot of special, talented players in mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. It was so awesome coaching them because we could tell them, like, hey, try doing this. I need you to do this. And they would go, doot, doot, and like that. And I'm like, yes. Like, we didn't even have to rep it out most of the time because they could just do what we told them to do. Mm-hmm. And we're like, let's go play, people.
Yeah, wow.
And
exciting.
But we had a lot of special players at that time. And a really great head soccer coach, John Marcus Duncan, who I had actually coached with my senior year at Millsaps College in 2004-05 before coaching with them for those mm-hmm. 7 straight years.
Mm-hmm. And you went to Pepperdine too, right?
I visited Pepperdine.
And then went to Mississippi.
Yeah, Mississippi College School of Law.
Right. Yeah. So do you love practicing law when you do decide to do it?
Yes. Like, how I imagined being a lawyer would be was like, if you ever seen the movie Elf with Will Ferrell?
I did.
So I thought everything was going to be like, we're going to collaborate. We're going to do these amazing things. And then if you remember that scene where... he like comes out of the Lincoln Tunnel or whatever, and he like meets the raccoon, and he's like, "Come here!" And he's trying to give it a hug, like that was me in law school and kind of in law practice. And the raccoon is like, "Ksh!" And he's like, "Okay, I'm still gonna hug you." And so, people ask me, they're like, "Well, what's your favorite type of law to practice?" And I was like, "The type where they pay me with a smile on their face."
What kind is that?
It's mostly transactional for established businesses. Mm-hmm. Startups typically don't have a lot of structure or a budget, mm-hmm. So I don't get involved in those. Mm-hmm. If someone has a fight or a dispute with somebody, mm-hmm. There are plenty of attorneys for them to hire for that job. Mm-hmm. So I recommend, sometimes I help someone find someone specifically mm-hmm. for that. Because uh-huh. sometimes it's like, oh, you're an attorney, you can do this. But it's like being a doctor that's a general practitioner or someone that's, you know, a pediatrician mm-hmm. or an oncologist. You know, just because they're a doctor doesn't mean that they're going to be able to go do these things that are specific to mm-hmm. what their situation is. Mm-hmm. And so... you know, it has to fit my skill set, and there has to be a budget, and because it's work. Mm-hmm. So on those things that I enjoy doing, it's when really people are collaborating, mm-hmm. Whether they're trying to kind of get into an established business or they have some inventory they're really excited about, mm-hmm. trying to get into a new space, mm-hmm. and it's like, and pretty much I tell people I'm a glorified secretary. Mm-hmm. I just read stuff that other people don't want to read. And I'm like, hey, here are the things you're agreeing to. Here are the things that you could probably negotiate with them. And they're like, okay. And they just sign it. And I'm like, what did you even pay me for? Mm-hmm. It's like usually people want to like just get the deal done. And mm-hmm. so I help a lot of people when there is an understanding between what they've agreed on. Is to get the verbiage to match that mm-hmm. and for it to be very simple. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if you say this, let's write it in. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, okay. You mm-hmm. know, and it's like, if you don't understand it, cross it out. Mm-hmm. Like,
right. So good advice. Well, but you're an advocate for them, right?
Yeah. Right? It's like, I tell people, it's like, I want to keep my friends out of the courtroom and on the beach. Mm-hmm. And,
good tagline.
And that, one other thing too is that like, you know, it'll come up. There are some stories that was like, I'm a cusser. But also, I like to know my audience is that I don't do bullshit and I don't do drama. Mm-hmm. And so when I catch a little tinge of whiffs of that, I'm like, oh, thank you for thinking of me for that work. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. Like they're offering me an ice cream cone.
Crazy. So speaking about that, in my notes from our meeting last week, you were young when you were involved in dispute resolution for bullying, right? When was that?
Yeah.
Like, was that the genesis where you, like, did that before you even started walking into the law practice?
Yeah. So when I was an undergraduate, I was, like, a counselor at churches and, like church camps for the summer or something. And I could always see, you know, how someone meant something and mm-hmm. see the person just light up with anger mm-hmm. over what they thought they meant. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, hey. And then I was always mediating those things. And I saw that Pepperdine had a really great program okay. for dispute resolution. Uh-huh. Also, it was like in Malibu, like things that would kind of draw me to the area anyway. Mm-hmm. And but I'd go to schools and churches and had, you know, made up a thing called Music and Peace mm-hmm. where I got to play my music and then, you know, talk to the kids about bullying, dispute resolution, and really just funny stories mm-hmm. and relate it back to, it's like, there's one thing, it's like, it made sense at the time. And then like, it's like, oh, this is going to be great. Okay. You stand over there, you stand over there. And it's like catastrophic. Someone breaks their arm and you're like, how did we not see that one coming? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when someone comes in and they're furious and it's kind of like, you know, you have to see how it played out to how it actually, you know, did interfere with someone else's thing mm-hmm. instead of like firing back. But it, when I go through the dispute resolution stuff and bullying with them, it's like, it's more of this kind of like sharing stories, and then I let them share their stories and all the hands go up and they mm-hmm. have a story to share. Mm-hmm. And,
well, so. I think, I don't know this because I don't know you that well, but in talking with you, it seems like you have a lot of passions and you have a lot of talent and skills, free thinker and all of that. But I do think that there is a pull in you for songwriting and singing. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to make a joke here, but okay. it's not that funny. It's probably going to happen. Where your law degree will come in handy is yeah. when you were to cut your own deals for that stuff, okay? That will come in very handy for you.
I appreciate that.
So to set up, because I do want you to sing a cappella, what okay, you great. Feel like doing, yeah. but to set it up, just take us back to when your mom sent you to Nashville and you shepherded your uncle mm-hmm. and you sung at a lot of open mics.
Yeah.
Okay. And go back to that. You didn't think you did very well, but other people gave you a lot of accolades, right?
Well, it was the thing to where when I feel very comfortable with a microphone and I can hear myself, then I'm more paying attention to the melody and the tone of the notes as opposed to the words. Mm-hmm. And then the words can come out as I get comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really know what I was singing. Like it can like somewhat make sense. Mm-hmm. Like I can come up with a chorus, repeat that, make up gibberish for the verses, and it's artistic, right? Mm-hmm. So, and so we did those open mics. And I remember my mom trying to send me to Nashville and I would never play for her. Mm-hmm. And when she would come into the room, it was like a laundry room connected to the game room. I would stop playing till she would like leave mm-hmm. and never like, I'm not playing for you, but it was just like, I could hear her come in. So I'd stop. I don't want anyone to hear me sing because I'm kind of singing the same thing over and over again and just listening to the tone. And so I don't want to irritate somebody while I'm doing something that's like engaging my mind. Mm-hmm. And my mom comes in, she's like, I think you should go record with your uncle in Nashville. And I was like, no, I guess that's fine. She's like, no. She's like, you're good. You should go record with your uncle in Nashville. And I thought I had her. I go, well, you're my mother. You're supposed to tell me things like that. And she goes, do you think that I want to send you up there for you to fall flat on your face mm-hmm. and for you to come home crying? Mm-hmm. I go, well, no. And I was like, she's like, will you go? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I could eventually, I will. And he took me to a couple of different recording studios. He's going to pay for it. And it you know, it was like, which one do you want? And I was like, the first one.
Did you go to the Bluebird Cafe?
I did. I got to play at the Bluebird Cafe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I've been there. I love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. But the first time I went, they were all booked up. So if you show up the second time, then you automatically get to be one of the songwriters that plays. And I can't remember what I played. I think there's a song that I have that's maybe still on iTunes called Princes and Thieves. My uncle loved it. But yeah, I had a lot of encouragement from my mom and from my uncle and from members of my family to like, hey, you should sing. And I'm like, well, y'all know that I'm a nice person, so y'all are just being nice to me on something that like you feel like, you know, it's like, hey, Jay's nice to us about these things, so we'll be nice to Jay about this thing. And but really I'm limited on how I sing based on the instrument that I'm hearing at the time. And usually like my acoustic guitar, it's like I get stuck playing like the same rhythms. And on the piano, it's different. I think that my voice can open up more on a piano, but it's hard to carry like a keyboard to a show all the time having space for that. And so a cappella is something that I always do, but I don't perform for people like a cappella. And storytellers is like just a great space. It's like, I'm going to sing for them here. And it was actually a night that Cucurel was there, the guy that was the featured storyteller and co-wrote, I believe, Umbrella with Rihanna, and then also Single Ladies with Beyonce, for that Beyonce sings. And I was like, great, I'm going to sing this song. And I didn't want to tell the title because like it kind of gives the song away. So I'm happy to sing it for you. If
yes,
you'd like
please.
Me to. They ask me what I want to be when I grow old, a lawyer or a doctor or a person that builds homes. I look at them and say what I want to be when I grow old. I want to be a beautiful soul. A beautiful soul can move mountains. A beautiful soul can part the sea. A beautiful soul can see the truth of what a person wants to be. So what do I want to be when I grow old? I want to be a beautiful soul.
Yay, so beautiful.
Thanks.
I love it. What, if anything, did this songwriter that wrote for Beyonce say?
Oh, it was like how I do things in my life is that I want to come across people like naturally. It's like, you know, it's not, so when I saw him after everyone kind of cleared out and shaking their hands to talk to him, and that it's like, you know, I hope that we come across each other more. And he was complimentary of me.
What did he say?
Do I?
I'm a journalist. What did he say?
And the thing is that
you're not going
to
tell me.
One of my memory gets so bad. I like to tell people when I can't remember things. I got a rock stuck in my skull when I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
And so, but he was. I remember because there's another saying that people might not remember what you say or what you did, but
how you feel.
Mm-hmm. And I remember how he made me feel.
Okay.
He made me feel like. Well, it's like he made me feel like it was good, and he made me feel like he enjoyed it.
Congratulations!
And I said, looking forward to seeing you around more in town. He goes, oh, we will.
Oh, I love it.
Because he's a person that loves God, and you know, it just needs to be one of those things for me. Nothing ever needs to be forced.
Yes.
And that the timing will work out when it needs to, and come across other people and. And I love being around people that don't ever preach, like, you know, they practice, and you can tell they practice. Mm-hmm. And Cucurel is someone that it looks like he practices. Mm-hmm. And there was another minister that I came across that he calls those things when it lines up, divine appointments.
Yes.
And I'm like, and it just something, like, it was just when me and that minister call him affectionately, I just can take that with me as opposed to being kind of like, no one's ever tried to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. And I love people that you can see them practicing. Doesn't mean they're good. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I'm good. Mm-hmm. Practice. So,
right.
And then I hope practice. It's, what was it? So yeah, the timing will work out, you know, or at least it's like, there are people that are on the beach I get to see all the time, and I love it when we're there and we didn't even plan it.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing when people are like, oh, when are you gonna do this music thing or whatever? It's like it'll mm-hmm. happen when it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just will gently encourage you that it's something that probably would be a great thing.
Thank you. But
very respectfully say that. And there's so many different iterations of names that I was coming up with for this podcast that I had shared with you at the very beginning, which went, you know, doing it my way and like the Lord is my shepherd, because that's your handle for Instagram and all that. But I think right now, and I may change my mind, but I think I'm going with, you know, catching one more wave, because you probably have a lot more waves to catch, right?
Well, and I often think about it that way too, is because even reading about really awesome surfers. There's a book, it's Barbarian Days, William Finnegan, if I'm getting his last name right, and talking about the lulls in between surf and what they would do, and then hearing about, like, keeping up with Laird Hamilton, a huge wave surfer, and there are times where the waves aren't even out there. There are times when the waves are crappy, and keeping myself busy while the next wave comes in, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and trying to keep myself away from just a handful or a tadful of people being like, what are you doing just floating out in the water? You know, it's like the waves are coming, man.
Right.
Like, so, but yeah.
You'll be ready.
Yeah.
You'll be ready to catch
and
it.
And the waves can wreck you too. Yeah. I mean, like there's, especially those, the big wave surfers, which I've never aspired to be a big wave surfer. And really, I just like being out on boards when other people are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very serious, can be very dangerous, and people will wonder, like, why do you even try? But when it works, it's so cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, one more wave sounds cool.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being here. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers will as well. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into V Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. NJ Lyles, thank you very much for being here. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you.